Hello, this is Debbie.
Chris.
And also sometimes me, Lowell.
Together we co-founded Yoga Therapies over a decade ago and currently run the Yoga Life Studio retreats and trainings. We are passionate about sharing the lifelong practices of yoga, shamanism and meditation.
In this podcast, we'll be discussing, dissecting and delving deep, sharing our experience and offering some mini practices to bring fresh inspiration and new insight into your daily practices. We hope you enjoy. Hello there, everyone. Welcome back. Today, we will be rounding up the intentions segment. And there's probably a question that you will be asking, how on earth do I stick with my intention? What happens if it all goes to pot?
I think the first step towards answering that question is to define actually what it means by going to pot. Because probably what people are thinking is going as planned and going to pot are sort of the same thing. But arguably when we start to work with meditation and intentional practices such as this, a great part of the practice is actually found in that sort of quote unquote going wrong.
I think that might be something that we have refined, actually, isn't it? Because something that we put all of our expectations in and all of our heart and soul into, and then all of a sudden it rears off and takes a left or takes a right. And then you just think, oh my, like, what am I doing here? So going wrong is actually sometimes it rearing further right, becoming more in line with what it is you really want or need to be doing. Could that be it as well?
Yeah, I mean, that, as you were saying that, it reminds me of a quote by a wonderful author, Matt Licata, who sort of fuses alchemical work and depth psychology. And he starts one of his books with the phrase, or the paraphrase at least, true healing is always a surprise. And by that, what he means is that you can't possibly know what is on the other side of the limitations that you're currently experiencing.
Yeah.
Because if you could, then frankly, you wouldn't be where you were.
Yeah.
There's a literal perceptual block there. And then there's something almost wonderful and simultaneously frustrating about the fact that something will seem absolutely impossible until suddenly you can't quite understand why it wasn't obvious all along.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're always learning as well, aren't we? And this is just part of our learning, the acceptance of that.
Exactly. Learning and practicing. And I think that the first skill we really begin to refine through meditation is not so much the practice of meditation itself, but is the practice of returning to meditating. It comes in that capacity to realize that you've become distracted, you're thinking about something else, your mind is in another place. And rather than defaulting to the assumption that somehow it's failed, that you need to start again, and whatever names for yourself that get sort of internally churned up, instead of allowing that well-practiced route to continue, instead you need to begin increasingly to cut through that response, to cut through that reactivity, and instead choose to return.
There's a bit of an example that I was leading a meditation just last week, and there was an alarm going off constantly in the building opposite. Wee, 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 wee. The entire first 10 to 15 minutes, I was aware that there were about 75% of the room were aware of this alarm. And I continued talking. And by the time I got to the end, I had to think, is it still going off? And heighten my hearing to listen. And it was still going off. But it just faded into the background. And I think there was quite a few people, about 50% of people in the end, could still hear it, but they were still going through with the meditation. And there was another 50% that actually just didn't hear it anymore after a certain stage.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, with that, part of it is that sometimes you do just need to say, actually, you know, now isn't the time. And part of building that habit of meditation is being realistic and honest. And if that car alarm is just too much of a distraction for you to reorient your focus to something else, then maybe the best thing to do is stop. Mm. We say a lot of the time in the asana as well, for example. If people are trying to master a particular pose, then they have to stop practicing at the point at which the capacity to do it with quality diminishes. Because you can practice doing something badly just as much as you can practice doing something in a productive manner. Mm-hmm. If you constantly try and refine a posture when you're beyond the point where it's possible to do, actually what you do is you get very good at just going beyond where that good stopping place would have been. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's a sign of progress, and sometimes it's just a sign of circumstance. Mm-hmm. To stop and say, now isn't the right time, and to conclude that effectively is certainly a far more mature practice than to sit there and stew and think, oh my God, I'm so terrible at meditation because I can't even tune out this one car alarm, and I live in the city and there's always car alarms, so how can I ever possibly meditate?
But I guess it's offering yourself boundaries as well, isn't it? Offering yourself something that you would offer somebody else. If somebody else was saying to you, I'm rubbish at parking, parallel parking, you say, listen, well, you know, just practice, or just, you know, park a little bit this way or that way. And if you're a foot from the curb, who cares? So you have to offer those boundaries to yourself as well, so you don't step over into that real negative response to yourself. But distractions are always going to be part of human nature as well.
Yeah, and absolutely. Dealing with distractions is one of the main reasons that people start the practice. I think perhaps that one part people are less prepared for is the navigation of the varying internal distractions that will be a necessary kind of first stage. In many ways, noticing and beginning to understand and recognize those inherent distractions is part of the cleaning up process of beginning meditation.
Yeah.
It's noticing the things that you didn't notice derailed you.
Yeah.
And as you heighten your attention, your awareness, and your state of embodiment, there are going to be many things that didn't bother you before because you weren't aware of them.
Mm-hmm.
That suddenly you become aware of, and it can even feel like a regression in some ways, but really it's more like an excavation. It's like an archaeological dig beginning right there on the cushion.
But also not necessarily on the cushion, because I think that people will say they insist that they have to be in a certain position in order to be meditating. For me personally, I have to prepare my space. I have to know that I won't be too cold, I won't be too hot, I don't have any itches, I don't have any scratchy socks on, I don't have a scratchy jumper on, I don't have something that's kind of bugging me at the back of my neck. And the reason I do this is to give myself, allow myself the initial ability to at least get into the meditation to start with. And then if things crop up after that, then I deal with it. And then I found that over time, I could wear that scratchy jumper and that was fine. I could wear the uncomfortable socks. I could be sitting up and not always laid down. And over time, and when I say time, you know, I mean 10, 15 years, it's become something. Yeah, it's been something that has progressed, but still regresses. And that's the beauty of this. It's just a constant journey, almost like a bit of a roller coaster, I guess. But the point is, though, even if you get a wonderful 5, 6, 2 minutes of that absolute beautiful stillness, it can almost be like a night's sleep. It can reset you. Mm-hmm. It can downregulate. It can allow your brain and your nervous system to rest. And that's why we keep going back to it.
Yeah. I think one thing that you said there that I sort of want to loop back to and really highlight is that it's important that, especially at the beginning, but throughout, that you do set yourself up to succeed. Mm-hmm. And if that means that there is some sort of, it's almost a ritualized process to setting up the space, mm-hmm. whether that be a trigger such as a favorite piece of music or a particular place, a particular environment, particular people, to surround yourself with objects or words, yeah, that facilitate the process for you, is in no way cheating. And in fact, it's the sort of the essence of approaching your practice compassionately. Mm-hmm. It acknowledges that you're aware that it might not be easy. Mm-hmm. Some days different to others for reasons that at first might be completely obscured, but that commitment is there. But there's care with it. You know, there's a balance of discipline and of gentleness. Mm.
Yes, it's that gentle discipline, isn't it? Almost like you were treating yourself like you were your own child. You have boundaries, you're gentle, but you're also committed to what it is you want, because the result at the end of the day is what you're looking to achieve. And once you've achieved that, it's definitely the reward worth waiting for.
I agree. Well, I think that probably tidies up quite nicely what it is that we wanted to share with you on the topic of intentions and setting them, and where you might meander with your January motivations. I've got a quote here from Robert Kiyosaki that I'd like to close with today. In school, we learn that mistakes are bad and we are punished for making them. Yet, if you look at the way humans are designed to learn, we learn entirely by making mistakes. We learn to walk literally by falling down. If we never fell down, we would also never walk.
Hold to that.
See you all next time.
Bye. Bye.